Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
On this episode of the No Chill Podcast, we bring together two Wizards greats as Tough Juice himself, Caron Butler, reunites with No Chill Gil. We break out how individuals from different backgrounds come together to form a team. A roster is put together on paper, but it's how the personalities mesh and the assembly of talent fits together to win games. Beyond that, there's the role of ownership, the style of coach, and of course the fan base. At this point, both Gil and Caron can speak from experience that there are adjustments to be made that aren't always possible when you're young. Speaking of being young, we also take a look at young LeBron versus now and a classic Kobe story that will only add to the Mamba legend. It's a loaded episode of the No Chill Podcast, and part two picks up on Caron's Tough Juice Podcast. So be sure to subscribe on the Himalaya app or wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to check out the No Chill channel on YouTube as well as the Tough Juice channel on YouTube. Here we go. Gil, look where we are. We have come up on the No Chill podcast. Uh-huh. Why? Because of Himalaya. That's where you can find the No Chill podcast first if you subscribe. But wherever you get your podcast, you can find us at the top of the charts. And we also have a fellow podcaster on there. Mm-hmm. The Tough Juice Podcast.
The Tough Juice.
The No Chill Podcast, the Tough Juice Podcast.
Salute.
Based on nicknames, you know. But Caron is new to the podcast game, so mm-hmm. he brought us a gift.
19 crimes,
baby. Wait, he brought us a gift. Should we be buying you a gift?
It's an honor to be on the platform, so, you know, we got to do it right.
We catch that sound effect.
And I know that's some good stuff right there because he don't.
No cheap shit.
Yeah, man.
So you want the big glass?
Or the small glass.
We're doing this early, too.
This is like.
You know, I don't have the white man palette yet. You know what I mean? I'm still Moscato. I haven't really educated myself on wines.
Well, we're gonna improve your palate here today. Live in real time. So I think for a lot of cheers, fellas.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, G.
Oh yeah.
You know if you throw some orange juice in there, that's a sangria.
No,
it's a sangria. That's actually a sangria.
Okay, so wait, I know this. Your drink of choice is
Malibu cranberry pineapple.
That's some spring break shit right
there.
That's
a lot of stuff right there.
Like a 17-year-old girl right there.
Where did you develop that?
In college? 17-year-old, you know, 17-year-old girl. Yeah, like, hey, you know, that Malibu, like, give me what she got. You know, trying to fit in, give me what she got.
But we talked about, before we rolled, about maturing, growing up. You know, that's what you do. You start with the Malibu, you know, cranberry pineapple, and you mature into cigars and Cabernets and whiskey.
Yeah, but that's like usually mentor. You see someone doing it and, you know, you're, you know, meeting businessmen and doing all that stuff, and you start. I box my life in. You know, I don't want to go no meetings. I don't want to do no dinner meetings. I don't want to eat in public. You know, so I miss the cigar. Oh,
yeah, why is that?
Because I like to watch TV when I eat.
I mean, I'm pretty sure you can go to a restaurant. It digests different.
It just feels better. You know, I ain't rushing. I get to watch, rewind. Like it's a whole mood. So sitting there at dinner trying to have a conversation while eating and, you know, it's just don't.
You don't feel like you're watching reality television when you're watching people while you eat?
Nah, I just, not, like, that's why. Remember,
that's
like,
how I feel.
I remember we used to go out and never really ate. Like, I just sit there. It was just, give me some drinks.
Like a couple drinks. What, like,
were you a closet eater? You know what those are?
Yeah, what is
it's
that?
Like your skinny fat? Like
it wasn't eat, about that. It's like, I just related food with TV. So I always wanted to take shit to go, mm-hmm. You know, I want, you know, deliver it to me. So when we go out in public, it's more just drinking and vibing. But when I wanted to eat, I want to watch and laugh and ha ha.
When do you eat best?
Watching Martin watching a movie. Yeah.
Did you guys have team dinners back in the day and Gil would not go? Or you just, because the funny thing is if you kind of invite people and then they stop coming through, I'm not going to invite him. And they're like, that's when you get FOMO. You're like, well,
you know what?
It was be
so,
there too.
It was so crazy. I think Gil was the first teammate. It was second. I say second because I went to Kobe's spot often when I was with the Lakers. But Gil was the second teammate home that I went to. And he threw like a amazing party.
It was the New Year's party, yeah.
New Year's. Sashia had everything set up, and I was just like, yo, this dude, this shit is crazy. He had a fucking aquarium in his house, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was just like, you know, because I didn't realize, like, I had money yet. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you could do that, too.
Yeah, but I'd never, like, because I just wouldn't spend money. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. I was just always, like, super, like, cheap as fuck. Like, I'd buy, like, a car and stuff
but
like that.
I think you, before, I mean,
but he was living
differently. Mm-hmm. You had an imagination, like, man, when I sign this,
I'm talking about he was living, though. Like, yeah. He was real life living.
But you know what's so funny? It's like, and see how he said that. How long has he been in the league before he gets to me and says, oh, this is the second teammate? Because everyone thinks, yo, we kick it. We kick it. We do, but we're so separated from each other because we're all different ages. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're all different ages. We all different things. Like, okay, this person might have a fiance. This person is single. This person is. So you have to actually pick and choose on when you're going to spend time with someone. So that was the year it was like motherfuckers just never came to my house. I never invited. I just was a homebody when it came to that sense. So if we did go with each other, it was to a club. And we know if him and Antoine went out, okay, it was a serious one. Okay, it was special. Yeah, it was hard. It was hard to get, you know, it was hard to get them two out, you know, in public. So it was like, wait, you know, somebody like, yo, you coming out? And I'm like, nah. And they're like, yo, Karan and Antoine coming. Bullshit. Karan and Antoine? Oh, shit. Well, let me put my jeans on. You know, it's going to be a good one. You know, so, but other than that, it's like we go to team and, you know, it was like, you knew how serious it was if the two captains were there. You know what I mean? Like, okay, this is a real one. We're going. They really want to vibe. You know, it's a real. Other than that, you played your separate wings because everyone's living a different life. You know, you got your strip clubbers, you got your partiers, you got your married men, you got your fiance men, you got your family men. So it's hard to really sit there and mingle as a group. We vibed on the court, just telling stories in the locker room, and that's where our vibes came from. But when it came to like going to each other's houses and vibe, it was rare.
Yeah. Mm. Because we was just, like, different spaces.
I've never been to his house. I've never been to Antoine's house. It's just
but we just vibe. Like, we just connect.
Yeah, because also you think of so much time on a plane, on a bus, like, walk, like, shoot arounds, practice, all that stuff that you do. Like, man, I just want my own time. I see you too much, you know, like, more than my family.
It's just not that. It's just, like, it's just when you left the practice facility, it's just, that's what I said, you didn't realize how different everyone was. I remember when I was at Golden State, like I got Chris Mills down here. I live closer to, but I'll drive to go to Dan Pierce's house because Dan Pierce was like teaching me, like, yo, hey, I need a rug here. I'm like, let's go get it. Nah, it's gonna go on sale in 30 more days, so I'm gonna wait. He's like, yo, I take my time my house because this is my house. So, you know, then you got Chris Mills, you know, he, you know, having fun gambling, got the cars outside. So I got two spectrums of life. And it's just sitting there trying to figure out which road I want to go through. And you see two different people.
Yeah.
You know, both of them, you know, got fiancés and, you know, at that time and girlfriends. But it's just two different wilds of life. And it's just trying to figure out as a young kid which one seems more fun, which is more realistic. And, you know, that's what it is. When you come into the league, you're trying to fit there and you're trying to look, okay, Kron got the suits on. Like, I see them like, damn, I need to get some suit game on. I said that when he pulled up. Like, man, I need to put my suit game on. This is nice.
Well-dressed episode we've
done. Yeah, I was like, and I said it to myself, like, man, I'm going to look nice over there. I need to go ahead and get me a suit too, you know? But that's how we did it. We learned from each other because at the end of the day, we don't know something until we see one of our fellow people doing it.
Yep. It's real.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like the why. So, I'm sitting here like, okay, let me go ahead and write that down. You know, cry, okay. He got the cigars. Let me go ahead and try the cigars. And that's how we learn from each other.
Yeah.
And also, where you come from is a huge factor, right? Like, your route to the NBA was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Way different from most, like, from yours or, like, say, like, somebody that's a blue chip, like John Wall, you know, was always, like, elite athlete, mm-hmm. you know? So, when you all come together, It's like, man, you don't understand what my childhood was like, what Racine was like, where I come from. You came from California, but in LA, but not like that LA Valley kid, totally different. So you might assume that you know something about your teammate, but you got to learn about them to really vibe with them and establish that chemistry.
You know what? I never like, and I try to police myself in this sense. Like, I never try to judge my teammates from my experiences. You know what I mean? Like, so I try to come in, and I almost was like too serious to a fault, you know, because I knew that I was being judged differently because of my past. So,
did you feel pressure? Like, if I mess up, it's all going to go away.
Yeah. I mean, look, I had one shot to be successful, like literally one shot. And if I fuck up on any way, any platform, any level, it's a wrap. You know what I mean? Like, so my margin for error was just a little different. Like, even when I went to the collegiate level, Calhoun accepted me there at UConn, but he was like, look, you can't be here. You can't go to out with the players. I'm like, damn, I can't go out like and kick it. Like, what's my therapy? Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's like, bro, you can't be in these environments. Otherwise, people are going to think just because the headlines in the story is already, you know, former inmate, former convict, former this, and now he's just doing the same shit on a college campus at the University of Connecticut. So I just always had that in my head, like, I can't be on the scene like that. You know what I mean? So I was just always thinking a little differently.
No, I remember so I'm from Connecticut. I remember at the time when Karan was it was big news in Connecticut, and it was not about him as a basketball player first. Like, you got this stud athlete, like Ray Allen was a huge recruit at UConn. It was just like they got the next big thing. But Kron was like, we got this great player, but he has baggage. You know, and I think Storch was probably actually maybe the perfect place for, like, could you imagine if he was in Arizona? Like, it's just different. Storch, Connecticut, I don't know if you've ever been there.
He only been there when we played. Yeah.
But did you play at Storch?
And it was a block, too. It was a block.
I think they beat us.
Right. Yeah, yeah. They said it was the famous goal 10. Oh, it was a block. I'm saying it's a block. All right. It's clear. Yeah.
You know, in your story and a lot of NBA stories on I have one shot, this is what I did to get here, is the reason sometimes I can't jump with Kaepernick on this last tryout. Oh, you only gave me 3 days to perform and this and this and then the conditions. And I'm like, hold on, wait a minute. Like, as NBA players, we go into tryouts knowing we're not going to make them sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, they already said they got it. It's 15 guaranteed. They got 15 guaranteed and I'm working out still because they called me in.
Sometimes you're just going in for the audition,
just in case somebody get hurt. Yeah, just in case somebody get hurt. They I got a last in. We go in it hard. So when you tell a story of I have one shot, what that is the athletic. I have one shot. So no matter what the circumstances is, it could have been raining and snowing out there. If you put a athlete in there who wants a basketball player in that situation, like, yo, hey, you got to go out 25 or 25. I'm 25 pounds overweight on Wednesday and that tryout's Saturday. Trust me, I'm losing 25 pounds.
Yes.
And that's how we do. That's what I said. You can't tell us that you're not going to make it because we've been bred to not make it. We've been bred. We done seen it all. Like, this man is the number one talent. I'm this and this. I've been the Jet. We got this. And that's why I'm saying, well, I just didn't like that aspect of it, because it was like, you know, if you really wanted it, I don't give a fuck if one person showed up. Go out there, do your thing. If that one person didn't like it, at least you can say, hey, I did my thing.
You hang your hat on that. Went, like, I left it
I
all
went
on the
25
table.
For 25. If he don't think that was amazing shooting, I can't say none for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I'm not going to sit here and try to convince and do all this and make it a circus part. So it's like when he sits here and says, man, I didn't have no room to do nothing. Everything was serious. It just makes me think, like, okay, we do think the same.
Yeah.
We do think the same that, hey, man, listen, most of us that had this journey, we only had one shot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We only had, hey, you got to work out tomorrow for this team. Be ready. We sitting there 4, 5, 6, 7 hours.
Heavy.
Sitting there, mm-hmm. making sure when I get there, if I only got to sleep 1 hour, 2 hours, when I work out, it's going to be the best work I can possibly put out. Trust me.
Yeah.
If whoever's in my way, I don't give a shit if it was Michael Jordan hitting dams. If it's me and Michael Jordan is guarding me to be on Charlotte,
he getting
his ass busted. You know what I mean?
For real, that's the mindset you have to come in with. You know what I mean? Like it's a disposition that few are able to like tap into. You know what I mean? And just like in business, like I think sports teach you a lot about life. You really do, because it's mm-hmm. so many parallels, and it teaches you how to be an asset to whatever you're doing. It teaches you how to, you know, deal with adversity, how to deal with hardships, you know, man, rejection, all that shit. And then it also teaches you how to level up. You know, if you're playing among superstars, you take some of the tangibles that you see from those guys and you level up. Mm-hmm. My first superstar that I played with was a rookie. It was Dwayne Wade. He was a certified superstar. We knew that he was just different. I don't know how to describe the shit. I just say different.
When I describe that different in his mentality or his perspective.
His game, listen.
His game, yeah, but at that time, he didn't know what his game was specifically. Different. It was his perspective
you
on
can,
the league.
You can go to any fucking basketball court or any Martin Luther right now, and you can see some kids out there, and you just be like, okay, sorry about that. You could be like, this guy, look at that shit. I'm getting interrupted. You can see a guy on the court and you just be like, he good, he nice, that motherfucker different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I saw that immediately with D Wade. Kobe Bryant, we all knew already. He was a champion and, you know, the Shaq trade and everything. And then when we went to Washington, I was just like, you know, you seen Gilbert, he hit the shot versus Chicago in the playoffs. And I was coming to fill the void of something that they lost. So I knew that immediately that pressure was on me to be like the plug guy for that big two that was already in existence. But I saw Gilbert like in the gym around the clock because, you know, I was a dude that liked eating. So I would go downtown, I'd go to Clyde's, and that was my spot. You know, I found the spot immediately. So every time I brought my family through the arena, like we heard balls bouncing. He was in there just different, working out. So it was just like, okay, he's forcing me to level up because why the fuck I'm eating and chilling right now and the best player on the team is doing this right now. So it like, you know, people force you to level up, and that's what happened in life and business also.
You know, it's so funny to tap on that. What year? This is 2005, yeah. 2006, right? So you're talking about 2005 and 2006. When I learned how to be in a gym, I had Jason Richardson and Troy Murphy in there with me and Mark Jackson, right? And then you go to Washington, nothing. Karan comes. And I said, come in with the family. You know, they come in, show the family, hey, this is locker room.
Yeah.
Next time I'm in there, he in there. You know what I mean? Next time I'm in there, he in there. And then you see that he's same thing I'm thinking. Oh, shit, that motherfucker tried to beat me to the gym. You know what I mean?
That's what it's about.
And that's how you're supposed to be. Like, you're supposed to look at a teammate and say, you know what? I know what makes him good, and I want to tap into that ability. I remember I had the D-Wade thing. Oh, he bust. Well, he didn't bust my ass. He bust Larry Hughes' ass, but it was because of me. it was because of me.
That's the best way to put it out there, right?
Yeah. It was one of those things where they were asking us about the Heat. And I was like, nobody worrying about the Heat and Dwayne Wade. He can't shoot. Just do what they did in the Olympics. They're just sitting there. He can't shoot nothing, right? Woo! Man, that man, like, I've never seen someone that don't look angry playing angry with no words. Whooping ass. Like, every spin move looked amazing and up and under. I've just never seen someone dominate without actually shooting it. He didn't shoot a jump shot. Gave us 40.
Efficient
one. It was a quick 40. And we back in the locker room, right? And Larry Hughes never really says anything. He says, "Hey, hey, shut the fuck up." Oh no, no, no! I planned on it. I planned on it. Yeah, I'm done with all that calling players out because he fucked you up, partner.
Hey, look, it kind of reminds me of the situation when he dropped that 60 in L.A. Right. And he did the whole bow thing at half court and showed his ass. And I was just like, I didn't even know he had 60, by the way. Like, I'm like, I'm tripping because I had like 27, 20. I'm like, damn, I scored 28 out here at, you know, Staples. And we go to the locker room, and I'm looking at, I think it was Deshaun, somebody's like, yo, this motherfucker had 60. And I was like, no, he didn't. And I said, oh, shit.
Well, you have 48 and Deshaun told you that?
No, there was a game. No, that's what I said. It was one of those games.
Now, I thought you told me it was like a timeout or some point he did tell you. And then you're like, I.
No, I'm at the free throw line, and then it was one of those things. Bro, and
nobody
the lady said,
knew. Because it was just, it was a, I don't want to say it was effortless because he was doing it, but it was just like, and then.
You were used to him.
No. See, bro. Okay, like, that's what I said. It was one of those games where everyone talks about the 60. But no one paid attention to the 60 as individuals because all of us was balling. That's what I said. Like I said, he had 20 something. Antoine had 20 something. Deshaun had, like, so everyone was balling. Like, be honest, if somebody was like, yo, motherfucker got 60, we'd have thought it was Kobe because he made that fourth quarter comeback.
Yeah.
Killing. Because we were blowing them out. So yeah. It was really, that's what I said. It didn't look because the lady's like, oh, you had 60 tonight. Who has? And I had to look up. Oh,
they said, "Well,
yeah, thank you." Yeah. And that was the thing. Like, she welcome. The lady told me, and it was one of those things. It
was all purpose too. It was all purpose 60 because we needed all every bit.
I've
of
seen
it.
The footage.
Yeah,
I'm aware.
But he set the stage right. Because we're talking about Larry Hughes guarding Dwayne Wade. The next game, you know, I usually always text Kobe before games or just talking shit. I'm like, what up, Cole? What up? You know, nothing. Come to the game. He always give me a big hug and shit. I was like, what up, family? Nothing. I said, oh, that's what you on. And I'm looking at this motherfucker. I'm like, you want some of this action?
Did you tell him that? Because I know inside you would have been like, this is a peak right here.
Yeah, but he got a thrill out of that type of shit. We had to try to slow that thing down, man. Like, I was just like, I was looking like, oh, shit.
That was the funny part. Like,
I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah, because
he had to guard him.
He had to start it. Remember that was the famous, you had stopped the 2-on-1 break. Boom, like this shit, crying. He was like, that was a stupid foul.
Yeah.
You know, you got to, you wasted a foul on that. You know, you got to guard me. You need all six of your fouls.
Yeah. Why would you pick up your second foul knowing you got to guard me? Yeah. I was like, oh, shit. I got two fouls in the first quarter having to try to contain Kobe Bryant. One that's mad as hell because this brother went out there and scored 60 in his crib. And not to mention, you got a billboard that says 0-60 real quick or something. So like, zero to hero, right? Bro, it was like, oh, wow.
But that's what I'm saying. And it's funny because I don't have to deal with it. So, you know, it's just funny how we used to just deal with things because it's like, woo. Yeah, Kobe got y'all tonight, brothers. I got Swish Parker. I ain't got to deal with that.
I got Swishing and Derek Fisher.
Yeah, I got them, so I ain't got to worry about none of those problems. He look angry.
No, and that's what it is. I wanted to get into was how, you never want to change your game, right? Because that's your identity. And that's who you are. You never change your game, but depending on your teammates, you have to adjust your game. So when you have different personnel that comes in, that Karan has to take that toughest cover of LeBron, of Kobe. So for you, too, to know, like, hey, he's going to have his hands full on defense right now. I'm going to step up scoring.
You know, the hardest part about when you have new players coming in and new players that are dominant, you have to try to figure out how to implement them into your games. So you got to remember, like, when you already have two guys that's been there and we already established alpha and who's who. Now you have a third one, you're like, all right, like, what is this game? Like, how is this game? You know, we don't really know much about him in this system.
Yep.
Like, we know what he does, but how do we compliment him so he's successful? That helps us out, and there's just not this big clash. And that's what people don't understand. People see trades and be like, oh, yeah, he's going to fit. Not necessarily.
Right, on paper is one thing.
It's on one paper, so now we have to see, okay, how does Karan like the ball? What does he like the ball? What does he like to do? Like, what is his, like, what is his go-to? So you, we're sitting here, like, even though I'm trying to score, I'm still looking to see, all right, what is he naturally doing?
Yeah.
So I know where to throw it. Okay, I throw Karan. Like, I knew if I throw Karan a wide open three, Karan ain't taking that.
That ain't him.
He not a Klay Thompson. He going to hit him with the pump fake. He going to hit him with the pump fake. Get a shimmy, pump fake, hit him with it. You know what I mean? So, like, knowing that, okay, if I'm going, I have time to throw a Karan because that's not Karan's natural shot anyway. So, okay, now I can go. You know, so then we had to realize, like, all right, listen, hey, I ain't passed the ball to these motherfuckers in a while. You know, I pull, everything's a fast break. Let me call some, hey, what's Karan and Antoine's plays again? Four is out.
Nah, and then you got Karan, like, because Karan was passive aggressive.
it was real. Okay. Yeah, he's passive aggressive. Like, he wasn't like, yo, hey, give me the ball. He was like, oh, hey, there's other motherfuckers on the court too. You know, we
say something, yeah, just throw it out.
Yeah, throw it out. Hey, mismatch. I got a mismatch. Like, oh, shit.
But were there times where he said that and you're like, but I'm good right now?
Nah, but that's what I said.
He was always good.
I always thought, that's the problem. As a player, we always think we had a mismatch. So when I heard it, I'm like, oh, shit, he's mad. Like, you know, now I know he's mad. Like, oh, damn, that motherfucker got him on. My bad. I ain't know you had him on you the whole time. Shit, you done let 6 minutes go by.
Let me throw you a couple bowls.
Yeah, let me, you know. And it's one of those, so you have to understand, and we understand as players, like, the personality is going to clash. But the clashes is, they're not serious clashes. They're like dumb clash. Like, yo, you ain't see me over there? Like, nah, I seen you, but I had him on me though. So I was wide open though. Like, yeah. I got the charge, or I threw the ball and it overlooked. Don't overlook somebody or miss a pass or overthrow it in that player struggling. That's the angriest. Like, let a player be 0-for-5 and then he on a fast break and you miss him or overthrow it. Mm-hmm. That turnover, that's your fault. Mm-hmm.
You fucking up my feeling.
Yeah, that's an easy,
You ain't trying to get me off. You're taking shit personal.
Yeah.
But for the other thing is that you can, it's way different when you're competing against somebody, but then when you join them on a team, you would assume that you know something about their game, but it's a whole different. It's a personal thing. There's egos. There's the chemistry that has to be established. So when you saw Gil play, where you're like, oh, I've got to, you know, am I going to get enough shots? Am I going to get enough touches because he's ball dominant or whatever? What did you walk into that locker room day one assuming about Gil that changed?
You know what? I would always say he's definitely one of the most unselfish superstars I've played with, because, and you just heard one of his explanations right there, you know, him being aware and understanding that, you know what, I'm so good, and I'm like on the short list of guards every year in the NBA. I'm a superstar certified, so I know that I can get mine whenever. So he had to do a balancing act. And people used to say he's a two guard, but he was a great point guard, you know what I mean? Because he was able to set the stage for myself, Antoine. It was like certain games, it was like Kobe situation. Knew I got in foul trouble early, so it's like, okay, damn. I know he want to get his numbers. I know he want to provide for his family, and you understand that as, you know, basketball heads. So he would understand, like, okay, let's feed him, you know, early in the second quarter or get him 3 or 4 looks. And it was just like my isolation or my type, you know, just so I get my rhythm, so I'm staying in tune with the game. And, like, I don't think he get enough credit for that as, you know, a superstar in this game. You know what I mean? Like, because he was, you know, sometimes unselfish to a fault. The 60s and 50s and 3 quarters and, you know, he did certain things to, like, put a lot of teams and people on notice to prove a point, but he was still about winning. You know what I mean? And, you know, spreading that wealth.
I think the one thing that people don't understand about they look at numbers, and it always frustrated me. Like, people are like, yeah, you're just a ball hawk. Because you got to remember, at that time, I'm one of the first point guards that's averaging 28, 30. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have that, but everyone had it. I said, with Deshaun Stevenson as a two guard, which was the defensive player, that his scoring runs back to me. Yeah. See, when I had Larry Hughes, we split that. So we split the assists, we split the, you know, so between the two, me and Larry, we're averaging 40 points. You know, between me and, you know, Deshaun, we're averaging 40 points.
You're just putting up more.
I'm just putting up more. And people say, well, you only average 5 assists. I said, because I had go-to guys. Yeah. I didn't have spot-up shooters. I didn't have somebody else. Yeah, I sit here and give you 40 passes, and you know, no, I got guys. I give it to them. They're like, hold on. Bop, bop, bop. And they're going to, so, you know, you got two one-on-one guys, and Antoine was unorthodox. His style was unorthodox.
Like 1,000, 2,000.
You just, he was going to score weird ways. And so it was just one of those guys. It was more of a junk style game with him.
I was a point guard nightmare.
Yeah, so, you know, it's like, it was one of those, like, we have one-on-one players. So with those two one-on-one players, we're not going to get each assist from each other.
Well, that's what you're saying, one-on-one or a point guard nightmare.
You're not going to get an assist from me. So, like, a guy like, I know Chris Paul was huge on his assists mm-hmm. and, like, assist turnover ratio. Mm-hmm. So he would throw it to you at his peak, so he knew you was finishing, completing the play, he gets an assist. But with me, it was like, as Gilbert stated, like, it was like pat, 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 then a shot. Mm-hmm. So after two dribbles, you're not getting the assist. Mm-hmm. So that was my game. That was my niche. I was a rhythm dribble player. Not until later in my career where I just, in order to preserve it, I had to be just a catch a shoot guy or one dribble at tops.
So that's why when people ask me about the assist, I said, yo, like, fuck all that assisting, because, like, I'm playing a game. I'm not going to sit here like, man, this motherfucker just, he ain't gave me no assist. I just say, listen, I average 29. I have two other players that average 20 also. It can't be that selfish. I mean, you can look at, like, 29, 20, and 20. I mean, that's fucking, you can't be selfish if you got motherfuckers like three people averaging 20 on your team. And then you got Deshaun averaging 12. So you got four people in double digits, high double digits. So that means, damn, the motherfuckers are scoring somehow, because they get the half court. I'm collecting off of their beatdown. Karan then went to the free. So, we in the penalty now. Yeah. Now I get to play wild man basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't have to take those beatings. I let him, Antoine, Karan take the beatings. I'm sitting at the free throw line with the shot clock stop. Everything stopped. I get 2 points. You know, there's no running clock. So I had to figure out a way to create my points. So technically, I was stealing points. Because I'm using the free throw line. So it's like I'm James Harden with 800 less dribbles. Because he takes about 1,000 dribbles a game.
He manipulated the Princeton.
Yeah, right. So I'm in the Princeton where I'm sitting here trying to figure out, just quick. And just now, you know, you got to remember, we're the Suns on the East Coast. But our scoring is a little different. Because instead of pushing it up down, we're stopping the clock. You know, we're stopping. Let's go. 2 points. Stop. You know, so it's like, man, they got 32 in the first quarter. How? Yeah.
We mastered it too.
You know, you talked about the way that Harden plays. I want to talk about another guy that you said playing with superstars, and we talked about adjusting, playing with Kobe. And I think there's a story there that you've told me, but the first time that you were introduced to the team and Kobe wanted to test you, I think that was Kobe's thing, right? Anybody that was going to play with him, he would have to test you and see what you got in the tank, right? So what went down when you first met with Kobe and you were introduced to the Lakers?
Well, shit. it was a lot of things that went down. You know, Kobe wanted to see was about that workout life. And the second I arrived to, you know, Los Angeles, Kobe was just like, you ready to fucking black out.
That's what you told me. Tell me the story. Blackout.
Yeah, the blackout.
I didn't know that with him.
But I didn't know.
Told me this twice.
Not with him.
Yeah. No, that was with Chicago.
Anyways, blackout.
Yeah, the blackout. Like, so when I got got traded for Shaquille O'Neal, and we went to the press conference, and I never seen numbers like this on a sheet before. It was when Kobe signed 136 point whatever. I remember the point because it was a lot of money. You know what I mean? So he signed the contract. I was like, oh, shit. Like, this is different. And, you know, immediately you think that somebody's going to go on vacation or whatever the case. You know, that's a lot of money. And he was just like, tomorrow, you ready to black out? And I'm like, what the fuck is blackout? Like, we kicking it? Or like, you know, it's a summer. Like, it's fucking July. Like, what's up? Blackout. Workout. Bring your shit. You know, we going in the morning, going in the evening.
Till you black out.
Blackout.
All right, fellas, let's take a break because we got to remind you that today's episode of the No Chill Podcast is brought to you by CBS Sports HQ, the brand new streaming sports news network. It's live 24/7 and costs you nothing. That's right. It's sports coverage that's always on and always free. Always. Mm. CBS Sports HQ is coverage always focused on the game. Tons of highlights, breaking news as it happens, fantasy advice, and something we care about deeply here at the No Chill Podcast. I know it's close to your heart, Gil. Gambling picks and analysis to get you that extra edge.
Yes, sir.
Because it's about
just outsmarting.
Yeah. So when we turn on CBS Sports HQ, you'll see the tips and trends you need to win your bets. And don't forget, you can get access to all this great coverage completely free. I don't mean free for a week or a month, or if you have some special cable package. It's totally, completely free for everybody. You don't even need a login. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, or other connected devices at any time to watch CBS Sports HQ. No fake debates, just sports for real fans at the great price of...
free.
Hey. You don't even have to log in or sign up for anything. Download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today.
Today. Get it.
Yo, we also got to talk about one of our good friends, the guys at Mack Weldon. Some of your favorite threads.
Uh-huh. Yes, sir.
Mack Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now. Mack Weldon is a premium men's essentials brand that believes in smart design and premium fabrics. Mack Weldon believes that those premium fabrics and smart design equate to simple shopping. We tried it. We went online. We got our order. Mm-hmm. No problems. Mack Weldon will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants, and more that you will ever wear. They have a line of silver underwear. What do you know about silver underwear, Gil?
I don't.
Better than
I need underwear. I need to.
And shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. Mm-hmm. And hoop nuts. If you ever heard of that phenomenon, it's real. They want you to be comfortable. And if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it and they will still refund you, no questions asked. Not only does Mack Weldon's underwear, socks, and shirts look good, they perform well too. It's good for working out, going to work, going out on dates, just everyday life. So what we did is we went through, we got shirts, sweats, and shorts, put them on. They were game changers. So we're going to get some more. I think we're about due for a
yeah, we are order. About due.
So yeah, it was just a simple process. And we found our fit. They fit perfectly. They ship quick. And we kept them. No refunds needed. All right, that's right. So for 20% off your first order, it's at mackweldon.com with the promo code
No Chill.
You'll be in style.
Yes, sir. Okay. And I was just like, all right. Like, all right, I'm about that life. And shit, I told my wife, I was like, I'm about to go fuck with Kobe for a little bit. I don't know what he owned, but see what this workout, blackout shit he talking about. So I go in there, and, you know, the workout was simple at first. You know, you're going over, like, reps. You're going over, shots, form, shooting. You're going over skill set shit. And I'm just like, oh, this is cool. All right, now it's going to get intense. And, like, went to another level. And I was just like... So now we're going over, like, game shit, game speed, because we started off with just form, skill set, and then you go over game speed stuff. And then you compete with dummy defense, and then you start competing with each other. Like, we're going one-on-one against each other. So I was just like, yo, this shit is crazy. And then you had a post-workout with Joe where you're doing weightlifting and everything, and then you come back that evening.
So that's when I was just like, yo, this shit is crazy. Like, but I was getting like, yo, you work till you like,
pass out. Yeah,
black out.
Right.
And it was like, okay, damn, that was a lot. Two a day, like that was a lot. See you tomorrow at 6 or 7, you know what I mean, a.m. Mm-hmm. And he always beat you to the gym, and it was the same thing. But I think our connection came because I was the first guy to like sustain that with him. And I didn't like dodge that fade. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted that action because I knew that it, all the stuff that I learned in Miami from the godfather of the game, Pat Riley, he told me this shit. You know what I'm saying? He was like, do this, do that. You're going to be successful, longevity in the NBA. But I seen it in real time with Kobe. So it was like, cause I'm never like a stranger to work. I go above and beyond if you show me. And he showed me how to get to it. So I was like, enough, like say no more. Like, and that's where I was at with it. So it was different. And that's the blackout.
Yeah. The blackout was a Ben Gordon.
You told me, Karan.
No, it was Ben Gordon. When I said Ben Gordon, they said they was doing some Nike thing. And Ben Gordon said LeBron James is the best player.
The best player.
Yeah, you remember that? Yeah. So he went to Ben Gordon
and he said, told him what page it was on and everything.
What number and said, oh, so you thinking, wait till the season.
Like he read the page number in the
magazine.
Yeah.
And then he said, you want to go blackout? Yeah. And Ben Gordon was like, blackout. Yeah, you want to go blackout? Blackout. We're going to blackout. We're going to keep working out till we pass out. Yeah. But and then the same thing where I had to learn how to work because I'm sneaking in the gym watching Kobe. And, you know, so and I tell like players, like, you don't know what a work ethic is until you see the best player, second best player actually work out.
Yeah. It's levels, man.
And like people don't understand, like, you're an all-star. Yeah. How many shots you think, imagine what the superstar above you is doing. Imagine what the superstar is doing.
I would say this, and I always tell guys this. Any true pro, professional in his sport, his or her sport, can go to any gym and just look so dominant. But that's a testament to, like, their preparation and their training. Like, everybody to the last man on the bench, to the two-way guy, should be dominant in any, you know, Joe gym.
Mm-hmm.
Get what I'm saying? And if you're not, like, something wrong with your arithmetic, something mm-hmm. wrong with your shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And you shouldn't be probably where you at. You just probably know somebody that knows somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think from the outside in, we assume that, okay, you train in the gym, you lift weights, you eat right. That every player knows to do that.
No. You assume that 15 plus, like I said on Instagram, like, man, how is he in the NBA? He's sorry. No. Yeah, he's probably sorry compared to the rest of the NBA, but that is a professional athlete.
Yeah, you can never say that they suck.
But for our mentalities, like even us when we're playing, and he's this NBA player checking me. Yo, you're trash, bro. Mm-hmm. You ain't your defense. Get the fuck out of here.
Leave that motherfucker open.
You know, and you're like, but it's funny to say because you are the 300 and something best players, and we still look at each other how Instagram be looking like, oh my God, Robeson, sorry.
Yeah. Robeson will bust your ass.
But Robeson will bust your ass and lock you the fuck up. But you got to remember, but our talent compared to his our offense compared to his defense makes us say, get his defense out of here. You got to remember, like, people don't really understand that concept. How I prepared my offense, there's no defensive player that trumps my offense because I put so much time into learning the defensive principles to know, I don't give a shit who you are. You cannot stop me personally. So when you think about it like that, you look at someone like Kyrie and you look at someone like a KD and you say, yo, nobody can stop them. No. They've trained on their offense so much that they make this great defensive player look bad.
Yeah, they have a counter to the counter. Yeah, so it's so, like whatever you so, try but to
when
take
you
away.
Say, when you, but yeah. When you isolate this Kawhi Leonard, oh, no, he's shutting your shit down as a player across the board. But there's players,
his defense just doesn't work on.
Like James Harden.
Yeah. He can't stop a James Harden. Like James Harden, like if you look at James Harden, like what Patrick Beverly, yeah, what Russell said, Patrick Beverly just running around faking y'all out. In a sense, to those two talents, they are laughing. Like, yeah, get that, get his ass out of here. He can't see us. His talent is bottom shelf compared to our talent as offensive players.
Well, it's like you can say they suck. We can't say this.
No, but that's what I'm... No. Yeah. But see, to you, you guys, like, if you ask an NBA player, yo, who's top five defensive players? It'd be some people you probably never heard of.
I was telling Cron, who's the guy that you said, like, if you never would have thought it, but he would pick you up, like, 94 feet. Was it Telfair?
Banks.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He went to Vegas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just a matchup.
Like who guarded you, like, good?
You know what? I would say Bruce Bowen. And I know he has a defensive reputation, but the reason why he guarded me good because he crowded me. Mm. And, you know, I was a guy, like, and he knows, like, with isolation, I was an isolation-driven player. So if I go to the logo, elbow, anywhere, I can operate. I didn't even have to look at the rim because I knew where the rim was at. Mm-hmm. But if you crowd my space, you're forcing me to turn my back to you. So now I'm feeling you from this standpoint, and then he was able to get away with things, some of the old rules still, but because he was respected as a defender, he was able to, you know, kind of navigate through that space and had the respect of the officials where he got a little leeway. So, like, he was, like, one of my toughest guys to deal with. And then he added some extra shit where he'll run up under your feet or something every once in a while. So, you know, I cared about my ankles.
Yeah.
So, you know, that type stuff.
But he knew how to get in your head, and I think that's the thing about Pat Bev, too, is, like, if that guy, like him, is really annoying and does crowd you, how do you counter that?
It depends on who you are. Like, me, if Pat was guarding, I'm busting his ass. He doesn't, like, that's not the guy that troubles me.
But he's going to guard you differently. My point is, he's going to guard you differently than straight up, like, Kyrie would guard you. So Banks.
But,
like, you said, like, I'm not going to try to dribble. I'm not going to bring the ball up the court.
His tools, what he had.
It was physical.
Counterfeit in my, not even physical. He was quicker.
Yeah.
He was quicker than me. So when I tried to burst off, and because he's strong, so when I tried to take off, boom, he can, you know, so when I tried to change direction, he was pop, pop, pop.
He was able to catch your first
step? Yeah, he's catching my first step.
Yeah, see, and that's an offensive player dream right there, because if I'm able to get momentum in my shoulder, like, past your shoulders, or, like, get an angle on you, like, the rest is, like, especially for him, he lived at the foul line, and he was an efficient foul shooter.
Yeah, so it's like, now I gotta change my game just because this one person in for 5 minutes. His 5 minutes, he done destroyed my whole rhythm in 5 minutes. Now I gotta throw the ball, right, wait till he get out, and then try to reboot my regular basketball because I already went in a game already designed on what I'm gonna do. You know what I mean? Like, when I'm playing Cleveland, all right, Vrejao in. Okay, I gotta consciously know I gotta pull up because I know if I try to go in, you know, too fast, he's gonna be sitting there trying to take a charge. He's not a shot blocker, he's a charge taker. So I gotta sit here and consciously think about how this man plays. Just this fucking one guy disturbs, you know, a what's the name? You know, it's like, okay, I know I got Bruce Bowen on me, but when I take him because I can keep bouncing him, I know this other guy is going to always jump and protect it because that's their, you know, you consciously have to run the scenario through your brain too. You know, and that's why when people say, man, James Harden makes it look easy. Yeah, he's unfactored all of it in.
He's fucking smart.
Like when people say, man, that's simple. No, it's simple, but it's hard. Because you got to remember, every element of what he's doing, it's a counter against his offense. He's taking a three-point shot, but he's fading away. So he's always going away from the basket as an offensive player. So instead of you attacking the rim and shooting up and down, he's always fading away. I mean, even to the point where I had to just think about, damn, does he practice this shit? 90% of his threes, when someone's close, he's looking for the foul. So it's like he's already shooting and throwing his hands up trying to get a foul. And I'm like, does he practice that? Does he practice shooting, trying to collect that foul?
Look like it's instinct.
Yeah, but it's instinct, but it's going in.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like, well, man, that's going in a lot. That ain't no, that's like when Steve Nash is doing a, coming off the screen, running three. Like, okay, once, okay, that's, well, man, you didn't four times this game, and man, you're doing it every game.
But I would think also he does practice that for the fact that so many guys can go in the gym. We've seen guys at Mamba Academy that are pros, they hit 20 out of 20 from each spot. And they, everything's easy to him. So for James, it's like when he actually works on his game, is in the lab, is like, how can I manipulate the rules or use the rules to my advantage and work on this, with combine that with the skills that I have.
But manipulating the rule, but the style of most of his shots is like he's shooting like he's trying to catch that foul. Like it's like he's like he's posing. Mm-hmm. Like I look at it as a pose. Like he's shooting. Mm-hmm. Like you're jumping this way and he's already and it's just boom after. Like you can technically blow an and one damn near every time because it looks like he's getting fouled every single time. And that's what I'm like, how is he practicing that?
He's
like,
tough to officiate, but
yeah,
I think what he's mastered from an offensive standpoint is the art of whenever you have the best defenders on James Harden or Dame Lillard or any of these guys that's just so offensively savvy, they put you in a space where it's not even – like you're being exposed on the defensive mm-hmm. end of the floor because where is your second line of help? You know, usually you shrink the court, and San Antonio was good at this. That's why Bruce Bowen was good at guarding me because I would catch the ball at the elbow of the logo.
Yep, yep.
So they put me in a pie. Mm-hmm. So, like, I can't have all this side of the court to operate. With James Harden – it's like he's so crafty, he has a live dribble. And then he have, say, the Clippers, you know, Harkless or Harold or whoever is the back line at the basket. So he has the option once he – because he knows he's getting by this guy
because
mm-hmm. he's on an island.
Mm-hmm.
It's Gilligan Island. It was James Island. He goes by this guy. Now he has the in-between game because he has this defender on his back. And he's able to – his floater game is amazing. He has Capella at the rim, Tyson Chandler at the rim, or he's able to draw the foul on whoever that defender is coming up, or he can Euro you and get to the basket and finish. So, like, he has so much in his arsenal where it's just tough to guard him.
I think he did that exact thing when I was watching when they played the Clippers, is he had to be Pat Bev, smaller defender on him, and he went right, and he had – Trez was at the high post, and he came in like a bat out of hell because he was going to chase down. And he just went under that and drew the foul. So it was like he knew once I beat that first defender that they're going to come try to trap me hard. And that's what it's like. I'm not going to pull up. I'm going to draw the foul.
Yeah. But that's what I tell the people. Like when people talk about defense and giving these defensive credits, it's like you're, as an NBA player, you're only as good as your help.
That's real.
Like, so when people be like, yo, why you always make a joke about 1-4 flat? I was like, because 1-4 flat, that defender cannot guard me. He has no help. He has zero help. He has to rely on his ability, which basically he is done for because he has, defensive player, he has to react. So he has to react to me. So if I always have the first step on 99.9% of everyone, you're already behind me. Now, your next help is basically has to get out of this circle. So that means he has to make a damn near like a C-shaped, backward C to get in front of me to take a charge. If not, he has to block me while I'm going full speed. Best play on earth. If you're a one-on-one player, 1-4 flat. Mm-hmm. All that extra shit, they be dropped, 1-4 flat. There's no help. It's an isolation. I don't give a shit who you think can play defense. You can bring Scottie Pippen, mix him in with Jordan and Kobe. Trust me, a simple left to right, right to left. Hezzy, they done. because defense is only great if, because you got to remember, as good as your offense is, you're going to rock a defense, but a great defender can recover. Well, he can only recover if he has somebody to slow him down. And okay, he made me go left a little bit. Now he has it. Slow him down a little bit. I can catch back up. You know, if that's how defense works. So there's, like, in my mind, everyone sucks at defense. You know, and you know, and that's a, and that's just how. But that's how I.
That's a very Gil answer, though.
But that's how I thought the game. That's why and when you should, when he said, "Yo, they're like, yo, hey, this defense ain't that good." I mean, I rocked the shit out that man. You know, but that's how I had to. You know, that's how you have to think to go to the next level and to jump into those realms. Like
you asked
James Harden if what can stop him. Like, nothing. Yeah, say like fucking nothing. Triple team, quadruple, I don't give a fuck about none of that.
He wouldn't say that. He wouldn't have said that before.
No.
You know what I mean? Because he has the personnel around him now that can not just be shot takers, but shot makers. Mm-hmm. So when you have that asset and not liabilities, it's different. Because the second that you do decide to not let me, you know, do what I do, PJ Tucker's going to make a three. Mm-hmm. He's right there in the corner. He know that's his bread and butter. That's how he's going to continue to provide for his family. And you have Ben McLemore, who's desperate need of a opportunity. He makes shots. He's going to get a lucrative deal. You have these guys that's in these positions that just understand their role and they buy into it. Now, you asked James that question 4 years ago, he'll give you a great sound bite. Mm-hmm. He'll just tell you, look, the defense was hard. It was tough. They did a great game plan. In all actuality, he wanted to be like, I ain't got no motherfucking help. Mm-hmm. You know, but now it's different for him because he has help. So he might be the first player in a long time to average 40 points.
Like, what's the funny? like, look at Steph, right? 3 years, unstoppable. KD goes down, Klay goes down. Now, that supporting cast of deadly shooters is not on the floor. His percentage drops. His production drops before he hurt his hand. Because now, he's never played without these two weapons. So when he does his natural going into the game movement and he throws back and wait a minute. Oh no, this I throw up. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, they're doubling me now. Oh shit. Let me,
you know what he's saying? The 101 at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of traffic.
Now I'm the only eye on, like, everyone's looking. They're rather Draymond Green. So now they're doubling and doing all this. Cause when Draymond getting it, he's going to drive, suck it in, throw it to Klay going to bop you. You know, That option's gone. Give it to KD 101. That option's gone. Now it's just me pick and roll. Oh, they're not switching so me go against the big man. They doubling me now.
Yeah.
Oh, now the guard is staying on me. What you know, now that the game becomes a little harder. Mm-hmm. Because not because he doesn't have the talent, is that he never had to train for it. He never had to train like as a 5 second and below guy, if I had to give the ball to one person on that Golden State team, it was going to Klay. Curry never, this is not like a diss against him, he just never got put in a situation where he had to be a game winner hitter because he set four quarters. You got to remember, there's one year he set 30 of them.
Go back to College Davidson, though.
No, but I'm thinking about NBA. Like, yeah. You got to remember, so he sits his time where he's supposed to be getting his game like that to become that deadly shooter, he's sitting on there with the towel, dancing, having fun, enjoying life. So if you ever looked at Golden State's last 2 minute drill, they were fucking horrible because they didn't know what to do. Because if you ever got them in that situation, which was rare, they didn't really know what to do because they never trained. They never had, there was no game experience here because shit, we're winning by 30 every game. So who do we get the ball to?
That was on display like when Kevin Durant was first acquired to the team, and I remember the Christmas Day game. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know who the damn ball was going to.
Yep.
And it was like a clusterfuck because even when they drew up the play, it was just like it didn't look right because they'd never been in that situation. So it was like, it almost like they were running into each other.
That wasn't long after the KD Draymond thing. Right?
No, that was way before that.
But it was still, at that point, they were figuring that out.
But it was like, the same thing.
KD was like, just give me the ball.
And Draymond is like, I'm not you. I'm just grabbing it, going in, looking for somebody else because they've never
had it.
They've never had it.
But they had the perfect guy with KD that they never had before.
But that's what I'm saying. But that's where the clash comes in. It's not even a clash. It's a misunderstanding. Not enough reps. So Draymond, for the last 2-3 years, was used to grabbing it, going, and finding somebody, you know. There was never nobody say, hey, hold on, give it to me, go. I come down, do my thing. They never had that. So when KD's like, oh, hey, give it to me, and he takes off, bounces it off his foot. He going, yo, hey, what the fuck you doing? And Draymond is going to give him his word. What the fuck you talking about? I'm doing what I'm doing. You know, and that's where the clash comes in.
Well, that's what we're talking about when you have new teammates adjusting your game, not changing but your game. But you don't. But they at that point, they just hadn't done it yet.
They just haven't done it yet. Yeah. It was just one of those things where you, like, if I got, when I got in foul trouble or wasn't missing the game, they already know who the ball was. Even if Antoine's the second leading scorer, we already know who the ball's going to at the end of the game for the game winner, the next one-on-one player.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's just, like that's just how it is. And as players, when you're playing against opponents, you got to know who that gamer is. Mm-hmm. So there was something when I said, yo, that somebody was like, I think it was Matt Barnes, was like, yo, Clippers got 3 game winners. I was like, no. They got one very experienced one, Lou Williams. They got Kawhi Leonard, he's hit a few. Mm-hmm. He's hit a few big games. Then you got Paul George, who technically hasn't really been
not many,
there.
Right,
he not hasn't many. Been, not due to, like, we know who Paul George is. He's like, had a few in Indiana, got hurt, had to sit out a while, got back in and got traded, played with Russ. And like, he really hasn't had, you know, with Kawhi, 4 years, he's sitting, you know, behind, you know, Manu and all of them, who's taking those big shots. Then he had the 1 year he played, he was the big shot taker, but Aldridge was still getting some of those looks at the end.
It was the reason why he screamed like he did when he hit that shot that bounced.
And then he missed the next season. Then he goes to Toronto, hit some big shots in the playoffs, you know, but that's all you remember. But I tell somebody like, whoa, as a coach, Lou Williams is always going to get first dibs. He's proven game after game, year after year, he's equipped for that part of the game.
And he wants it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of players don't.
Yeah. You know, he wants to hit the shot.
You're talking about as an offensive player preparing for any defense, like, no one can stop me. And I think as a defensive player, it's got to be the same way, right? So whereas if you see LeBron, and you guys saw, I think you guys pretty much had the best shot at a young, crazy, athletic, ridiculously talented LeBron, and you had to take that on. Mm-hmm. So you're like, okay, LeBron, I got him.
Yeah, you know what? I tried to limit LeBron as much as possible. LeBron is still great.
But at that point, what were you trying to take away?
I'm gonna tell you, I was trying to limit him as much as possible in transition. He wasn't able to shoot, wasn't able to make perimeter shots. So he was dominant going right, tried to keep the ball out of his right hand. Try to force him to be a playmaker. Even though I knew that was his strength, I didn't want him trying to score the ball like every game. So some games we would try to make him be a playmaker and hopefully that he gave the ball to a Damon Jones or something and force him to score 30 or 40. But then some games it was like, okay, let's see if you can score 40 and 50. And he did. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think that was the story of the playoffs with us because he was able to score the basketball.
Do everything. It was like he was doing everything we wanted him to do that we didn't want him to do.
Yeah.
Like
we baited him.
Like we bait him. Okay, yo, you make them motherfuckers beat us.
He did.
And he's passing it to him. Like,
they making the shot.
Like, we're not winning. Marshall. Like, even if they miss it, he's still passing it. Like, yo, we don't expect. Like, no, we didn't. We think you're going to force the shit up.
Try to do too
and
much.
And to do too much. And he's like, oh, you're going to make me pass it 30 times? Okay. And they were like, oh, readjust. Then he scores. Mm-hmm. I think our biggest thing that we didn't take into consideration was our backups was smaller than him. So when you put a Michael Ruffin in as the center, right, and your back line is 6'8". And when we hear LeBron 6'8", without his shoes, 6'8 and a half, without his shoes, no one realizes that's 6'10 on the basketball court with his shoes on. Mm-hmm. So if our 4-man or 5-man at a time is 6'8 with his shoes and you have 6'10 with the shoes running in the lane with a 44-inch vertical, no one's that rim is not as protected as we think it is. See, so I started realizing, like, wait a minute. When he wants to drive and get to the rim, he looks over there. They pull Agauskas. We pull Brendan. Him and Larry Hughes drives all day because we have no big man. And that was like if you look at all the game winners, Brendan was never in.
Yeah. We had no size.
Yeah, we had no size. And
even
at
when
that point,
tiptoed on the baseline.
He's no going size. Over Michael Robin like you're too little. It's like yeah. He's the biggest at that point, he's the biggest person on the mm-hmm. on the thing. And the sad part is we beat them, but in chess they beat us because mm-hmm. they had a move that we wasn't paying attention to. Yeah. We're it's that whole thing of okay, they're going small, we're gonna go small, not realize he's still big. And we go small, it benefits him because he gets to drive with no one able to block his dunk.
Even when trapping him, to Gilbert's point, like Brendan wasn't in on a lot of the traps. So like he was able to see over the help mm-hmm. that was coming to possibly take the ball out of his hand. So that's a routine pass for someone that's as gifted as him. He's like,
Okay, I'm going to look this way.
Like,
I'm over to come to double A.
Yeah, it's not like he has to, you know, he's just like, okay, boom. That's where I wanted the ball to go anyway. So now you're at a disadvantage because we're playing 3-on-2 basketball headed towards the rim. And another thing was in transition, it was tough because, you know, you elect to pick him up 3/4 of the court, try to slow down his momentum. But that didn't help us because the pick still came. And then he was going downhill anyway. Mm-hmm. So the thing that I learned, like, in 2011, when I was part of the championship team and championship run, they did a 3-2 zone, Dallas. Mm-hmm. So all we did was just sit on the perimeter. We had 3 up front, 2 in the back. And Brendan was out there. And when you have 3 up top, 2 in the back, you take a lot of shit out the game. A lot of in-between shit, mm-hmm. a lot of everything, because you forced two of the best in the game at the time that lived in the paint, and Dwayne Wade, I think it was Dwayne Wade, Tony Parker, and LeBron James. You got two of those guys mm-hmm. living on the perimeter. And I literally saw, like, and this one I knew he wasn't winning a championship. I literally saw LeBron and Dwayne, like, our distance, and Dwayne threw to LeBron. LeBron was naked. He was wide open. Could have shot the 3. And he threw it back to Dwayne, and Dwayne threw it back, said, shoot the dead, like shoot the fucking ball. Like, this is in the fight. It was like, and LeBron and I want to shoot the perimeter shot. And I looked, I was like, we're about to win a damn championship. Because I just knew that was the moment mm-hmm. that they just, it just wasn't there.
Because that was so early for them, too.
They didn't figure it out yet.
Yeah, and you would think that, yo, he shoots threes all the time. He shoots the threes he wants to shoot all the time. Off the dribble, let me do my little step back. So,
he wasn't doing that when you guys played him, early Cleveland.
If you look at his percentage, he still shot off dribble. You know, so that pass straight to him, and he shoots it. That wasn't a shot. So Dwayne's like, shoot it, and he's like, he wanted to say, "My man, that ain't my shot. What the fuck you want me to just chuck this shit up for?" So that's what I'm saying. But you got to remember, if someone's playing, chess in their head. Okay, I'm going to drive a couple plays, get in the suck in. I'm going to pass a couple. It's like that Mike Tyson theory. Someone has a game plan. Mm-hmm. See, a 3-2 knocks his game plan off because he wasn't expecting a 3-2.
And Rick Carlisle said it. I don't give a fuck if he makes 6. That's on me. Post game, I'll address that. Like that's not on y'all. That's on me. And everybody bought into that. Mm-hmm. You know, like mm-hmm. with us, it was like, from a competitive standpoint, like if I'm guarding LeBron, he scored fucking 10 in a row. It's like, dude, like, goddamn, I ain't doing that shit no more. And it was just like, we just like, yo, that shit, we ball that shit and throw it out the window. But it was like, no, play the number game. Because this may work now, but now you're fucking up all those guys' rhythm. Mm-hmm. So when he do throw it to them, the one-offs that they probably would make, they have no flow.
Have to sleep, right.
Yeah, but like, just wasn't able to process that in real time.
Yeah.
It's a trust thing.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.